spreading the word in the Lancaster area. Next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principal Policy and the Executive Director of Camp American. And today, Mr. Sheets was supposed to be able to join us. Unfortunately, Barry is, well, he's a professional man. He has a job. He has clients who depend on him to be in certain places at certain times. And he, since he works very often with the state legislature, very often, they don't go on schedule. And he has to follow their schedule, not necessarily his schedule. So even though he was scheduled to be here, he was scheduled for something that actually pays money. And since he has a family to feed, that's where he is. And none of us can blame him for that, I don't think. So today we're going to talk to you about some things that you may be a little curious about what's going on with that opener. What is going on is that we're going to talk to Pastor Larry Oldacre, who is the regional home missionary for the Orthodox Presbyterian Church in this region. And one of the things he's working on is starting up a Bible study in the Lancaster, Sugar Grove kind of area. And since this signal from this station goes out into that area, we thought we'd give a little hand, especially since I am an Orthodox Presbyterian Church elder, and we always like to help our regional home missionary more ways than just economically with our tithe. So I'm going to introduce to you Pastor Larry Oldacre, and I'm going to ask him to give you possibly a little background information on himself. And then we'll go into what's going on, and we may even get into some questions about the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, since Barry's not here. He's PCA, Presbyterian Church in America. So their setup is similar, but not exactly the same. And we do have different general assemblies and different books of church order and that kind of thing, although they're not that much different. So, Larry, I'll turn it over to you. You can introduce yourself, tell us a little about what it is a regional home missionary does. Maybe you don't know. I don't know. So I'll turn it over to you, Larry.
Well, sometimes it's learning as you do, as in most jobs, you know. You kind of make it up as you go. My name is Larry Oldacre, and I will be a minister in the Presbyterian Church now for 30 years, come by the end of 2014. One could probably say that I've been involved in church planting from the get-go, in the sense that I'm a graduate of Westminster Seminary. I went to Geneva College in Pennsylvania, then I went to Westminster Seminary. And part of that, in that time, and it's getting farther and farther, you know, in the past, but at that time you were required to do a summer internship. So I did that. And my summer internship that year was come back to my home church in Akron, Ohio. I was in the PCA at the time. And I started helping them plant a daughter church. I was knocking on doors and meeting people and doing all that kind of thing because I was the young guy and had all the energy. You know, that's how it
yeah,
works.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah.
You always get the young guys to do that stuff. Well, that's how it began. And my first church in Pennsylvania basically was an older congregation that needed to be taught and rebuilt. I trained elders. I started learning all the basics. And from that point on, I've been doing church planting as what we would call an organizing pastor. The guy that goes in, there's already a group there, you got maybe a building, and you're working with them, and you're trying to bring people together, teach the scriptures, show them how it all fits together. And by God's grace, as you preach the gospel and disciple people, you know, you build the church. And so that's kind of formed what I do, is that I basically do church planting by discipleship. I meet people, I share the scriptures, I show them how the theology comes from the Bible, you know what, and put things together for them. Show them Christ, obviously, but all that goes into that, which, you know, because remember the Great Commission, Jesus says, you know, go therefore and make disciples of all the world. And that's what it really is all about. So the regional home missionary was a step in, shall I say, a bigger context. After I had done the organizing pastor's job, the church plant thing in Mansfield, Ohio, with the OPC, the presbytery said, hey, would you like to do that on a regional level? Thus the name regional home missionary, rather than just being a home missionary.
Right.
Okay. So I'm kind of the contact guy for basically it's a four-state area, parts of some of those states. And so I'm the initial guy that maybe hears of the group or has the contact, goes and meets with them and says, well, here's how we could maybe start something in your area. And that's how we got involved with Lancaster.
So, for instance, do you cover all the presbytery? For instance, Western PA, Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, Indiana.
Very good. You remember that. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I got my baptism by fire for a presbytery meeting by this last meeting in the fall.
Yeah, that's right.
I showed up at everybody's house to pick them up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and they're all sick. They're all too sick to drive for the 4 hours it took to get to the presbytery meeting. So they go, you're on your own. And I'm a new elder, folks. I have been an elder for just a year. I got to go to my first presbytery meeting, and I grabbed one of our ex officio members, who's a pastor, essentially. Pastors are all automatically a member of the presbytery by the fact that they're ordained by the church. Mm-hmm. So I grabbed one of those guys, and I said, sit here next to me and tell me what's going on. Because, you know, I got my book of church order right there. I'm like, okay, what's going on? So, yeah, I didn't realize that you were covering new churches in the entire presbytery. And folks, as you can hear, that's a big area to cover.
Yeah, it's really Western Pennsylvania, so just east of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And the lower two-thirds of Indiana and the upper two-thirds of Kentucky, but all of West Virginia and Ohio. So although I would admit that most of my hands-on work isn't done in the state of Ohio, what I mean by hands-on is I'm the guy that leads the study, that mm-hmm. does things. But, for instance, like even if you may remember, you had Sasha Wallacord, Pastor Wallacord on,
right.
on the station, and the program, I should say. And, you know, I was helping him. I'm like the consultant. You know, how do we do this, and how do we set this up? And so I often serve on what we call the overseeing session and would help them make those decisions. And so I do that. I have a work in Pittsburgh that I'm on the overseeing session for. And obviously the work with Sasha, I've done that in West Virginia and Indiana as well. So it's a lot of it's consulting too.
Yeah, we sit on session together for Sasha's church.
Right.
You are what they call, we're not going to go too deep into this, but we augmented
That's
the
right.
session with you. Because you are the person who knew how to guide Sasha's new church, which is it's called Knox Presbyterian Church. It's in Mount Vernon, Ohio, for those of you who are listening on the podcast and maybe in the Mount Vernon area.
That's right.
It's called Knox Presbyterian Church. And you augment people if you need help in your session, you augment elders onto the church. And that all that means is you bring an outside elder in and say, can you help us? And that's exactly what Larry was doing, because Larry knew the ropes on how to take a church from a mission work, which is what Knox was and still officially is. But
Correct.
Really, it's all been
almost.
It's all over but the shouting, basically.
That's right. That's right.
All the work has been done. The presbytery simply has to approve it at this point. Once that relationship, once Knox Presbyterian Church becomes what they call a particular church or its own congregation, broken away from us with our blessing, then Larry will no longer be on the session of Knox Presbyterian Church or Providence Presbyterian Church, which I'm a member of. Because the way it works is, maybe this is a little too much trivia, but the way it works is that the mother church, it serves as the overseeing session of the daughter church until such time as they become their own congregation.
Yeah, and that's really the essence of Presbyterianism. And people say, you know, what does that mean? And it's the word means rule by elders. And really what it involves is the taking seriously the idea that we're accountable.
Yes.
That we're just not off by ourselves doing these things. And so I'm not off by myself doing this. I'm accountable to the presbytery. And so the mission works are accountable to a mother church or an overseeing church. And so we work together until the little group is able then to govern itself. Once they're mature enough, then they are still accountable to the presbytery, but now they're self-governing, self-supporting, self-propagating. But you help them through that process. So that's how it works. It's this idea that the churches are connected. We're not just individual churches. And that's really the essence of Presbyterianism. And, you know, you can think about that in terms of perhaps even this program as we think about government. You know, I tell people, you know, where do you think that the founders got our kind of government from? They borrowed it from the Presbyterians.
Yes.
The level.
And we've explained that when Barry and I teach the Constitution classes. We have a Presbyterian form of government, not an Episcopalian form.
Yes.
And by that, I don't mean Episcopalian church. Episcopal means that basically you have, it's a top-down kind of church structure where a bishop or an archbishop basically sort of runs the place. It's a one-man rule kind of deal with other bishops under him who put the rules out that way. Presbyterianism is exactly not that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
We have a general assembly and a presbytery, but they have very limited authority. They have very specific areas where they speak, and most of it has to do with doctrine and that kind of thing. But the presbyteries are essentially independent, except that we send representatives to those bodies to do the work when things, the Book of Church Order needs to be changed about the way certain kinds of discipline are done and that kind of thing. And don't make it sound like the elders are all sniffing around looking, ooh, what's so-and-so doing at home there? That's not the way this works. We don't want to go too much into that because we just did a 12-week class at Providence OPC where I'm an elder, where we explained the Book of Church Order.
Oh, okay.
And we did that so that we could get people interested in becoming an elder or a deacon.
Sure.
Because the OPC basically has what's called a two-office view or...
They're going to probably say they have a three-office
view. Three-office view, probably, yeah. And what that means is pastor, elders, deacons.
Right.
They are separate offices. They have separate responsibilities. And that's not really why we're here today, but a lot of people don't understand that, and it sometimes people, well, we discovered when we taught the 12-week class, even people who are inside the church structure don't necessarily know how it works.
That's right. But it impinges on everything in terms of how you do church planting.
Yes.
And that's why it fits. Again, it's kind of like your worldview. You know, how do you understand how you interpret reality? Well, there's, shall we say, in companies, there's a corporate identity, and so it is with the church. You have to know who you are to know how you do what you do. They both play together. You know, you're not going to be consistent. How you do what you do is informed by really what you think about the church and how it operates in terms of Scripture. And that's the other thing about Presbyterianism, by the way, before we leave this topic, is that what we're endeavoring to do is to emulate biblical church government. We see from the Scriptures principles that you find, and you find them, for instance, in Acts 15.
Mm-hmm.
You see them in Acts 6 with the deacons, but the elders go to the big meeting of the church in Jerusalem, and we're saying, okay, this is how that works. So we're trying to, in a sense, put that into practice in the 21st century America. And we've been doing, of course, Presbyterians have been doing that since, you know, John Knox
came up with
the whole thing. But anyway, that's, like you said, a different subject. But that's how we get into church planning. And the important thing is that there is this accountability, that we're not just doing things on our own. And so the effort in Lancaster is under the oversight. Right now it's under the oversight of the presbytery. I'm the point guy, but I'm under the oversight of presbytery. And if God would prosper it, then it would be put under the oversight of a local church, perhaps even Providence again, who
knows?
Could
happen, yeah.
Or another one, and perhaps the Columbus Church, for instance. And then they would help them in that maturing process.
Yeah, very often... depending on how it's done, church members will, as the plant progresses, church members from the mother church will break away and start attending the daughter church, and that kind of thing. That happened with Knox from Providence. There were people who were actually closer who began to attend Knox Presbyterian Church, and as sad as we were to see them go, they're still brothers. We see them when we attend up there on occasion. We go up for a visit and visit Sasha's church, and we see those folks, and we have fellowship with them, and it's all very, very much a beautiful thing to know we planted something. And for instance, very often daughter churches take off.
Yeah, right.
Oftentimes. And that Knox plant is one of those. I think they're up to 57 members. To those of you who are going to mega churches, that doesn't sound like much. Let me tell you, in an OPC, after I think they started that. They started their Bible study in 2011.
Right.
And it's early 2014, and they're up to 57 members and 70-plus people that are attending every week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very strong plant.
It is. And it need, what's good about it, again, is it's just not fluff. I mean, these are people that are committed. They've gone through what we would call a membership class. You know, they're learning doctrine. They're putting it together. And that's not to take away from any other church, but, you know, when we're talking about an OP church, we're talking about people that are really being taught, as you know from Sasha when he was here, how to apply the Bible to every area of life, and that's important.
Yes, and that brings us kind of to the topic, but now that we've completely confused people on Presbyterian church government, let's go over and talk about the real kind of crux of what we're looking at. You know, you may want to explore. You may be looking for something with the flavor that we've been talking about. What exactly are you getting ready to do with this project in the Lancaster area?
Well, what we're hoping to do is to have an event where people can gather together and learn some key theological, biblical concepts. And then get excited about that and say, wow, this is neat, and explore that a little bit, and then say, okay, I'm interested in some more. So it's kind of a teaser, if I want to put it that way. But so what we're doing is we're using an R.C. Sproul video series, and Dr. Sproul is fairly well known in this area. People have heard him. He actually appeals to people from all kinds of different church backgrounds. But the thing that's key about Sproul, number one, he's an affirmed and avowed Presbyterian, so you know where he's coming from. He talks clearly about Reformed faith, and he's able to teach in a way that brings doctrine from the Bible into a level that's understandable by most people, and they get it. They understand it. And so my hope is that we can begin this study, and people say, I like what I'm hearing. I want to hear some more. Okay. That's how you start a group. You get a group of people that are interested in this, and we say, you know, there's even more yet, and let's explore this together. So it's really what I'm trying to do is to gather a core group, people that would become the initial nucleus or core group that would turn into what we're calling the Reformed Church in Lancaster.
Okay. Now, are you shooting for the Lancaster? I remember when this first came up, they were talking about Sugar Grove possibly. Is Lancaster the target?
Well, it is the target in as far as it's identifiable.
Yeah.
People know, obviously.
People know where
it's at.
Where Lancaster is, yeah.
Because, again, the thing that's unique about Reformed churches, you got to know a little bit about Ohio history. The Presbyterian Church, the Reformed churches, kind of stopped at the Allegheny Mountains. They didn't really cross into Ohio way back when this was the Northwest Territory. The Presbyterians and the Congregationalists kind of had an agreement to evangelize the area. There were some problems with that agreement that we won't go into here now.
Yeah.
But the point was is what happened. You had the influx from West Virginia and Kentucky, and this was Methodist Baptist country, Congregationalism as a form of government, and the Presbyterians never really took root. So I'm saying all that is because I would say the Reformed and Presbyterian Church isn't native to Ohio soil. So we're trying to find those places where there's at least a group of people, you know, a city that's identifiable, that people come to. I mean, if you go to Lancaster, you know all the shopping centers that are there, you know, all the important things of it makes a small town operate. And so people would come into, because most, as I said, most Reformed churches draw from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And Lancaster's accessible in Licking County, or Fairfield County, sorry.
Fairfield, yeah.
Yep, I didn't mean to say that. Sorry, I've been around Ohio
too
much.
That's okay. Yeah, you're in Licking County right now.
I am, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Fairfield County. So because that's why it's key. And so we're going to start there, and we'll see what the makeup of the group is like. The thing about a mission church is that its location may change depending upon who God brings together and where they're from. But right now, it's on a main drag, so to speak. You know, 33 goes there down to the state.
Sure.
And it's accessible, and so we're hoping to be a place where people will find us.
Well, it's accessible from points north and south because you can draw from Logan. You can draw from even from Athens.
Right.
And I would assume that Athens would be a target at some point, just because of the fact that it's a place where you can, it's a college town,
right?
And that's a place where the very coveted place to be. Let's put it this way: Sasha started Knox Presbyterian Church in of all places, Mount Vernon Nazarene University. Mm. That's where the Bible study started.
That's right.
Which may sound odd, but it's not. Christians helping Christians, mm-hmm. and Sasha had an in there because he's a college professor and he's taught there before. He taught at the business school, so you know he was able to get a room. And gosh, you know, they were happy to help, and that's a good thing,
right? You know, and that's the thing. It's where people are gathering already, in a sense, in business and homes, but they're wanting to learn. That's mm-hmm. what we're looking for. We're looking for people that want to learn. And so we're listen, we were willing to teach the scriptures and to open up theology. And we're not doing it from, you know, my own particular personal bent on it or something new. We're talking about the Christianity that stood the test of time that goes back to the apostles.
Yeah.
We're talking about Reformed theology, which was the rediscovery of that. Of those, we call them the doctrines of grace, you know, the sovereignty of God. And the fact is that the focus of redemption is not man, but God himself and his glory, as Calvin writes about. So people that want to get into the meat of it, one of the neat things that I remember when I was doing the church plant in Mansfield, Ohio, one of the newer members of that group said to me, "Wow. This is the first time that all those pieces of the Bible and theology fit together in a picture. I get it now."
We have a studio audience today, and the studio audience just gave us a thumbs up. My wife is sitting in the back working at her computer. You may hear the clickety-clack from time to time. We have used very sensitive microphones here. That's also what brought me to the Reformed faith, was basically how all the puzzle pieces suddenly fit together, and I didn't have to use a hammer to make it all kind of bend it into the shape I wanted it to be in when I came to the Reformed faith. And in fact, I came to the Reformed faith because of my broadcast partner, Barry Sheets, who basically he and I were in a group together, not a Reformed group, but it was a group of like-minded individuals. And he started talking to me, and he kind of took me under his wing and gave me a bunch of books. And I said, you know, one thing about that a lot of us, not everybody in the Presbyterian Church, but a lot of us read a lot.
Yeah.
And I started reading, and I'm like, oh, this is what I've been looking for.
Yep.
This makes everything make sense.
Right.
And once I reached that point, I was a whole hog for it. However, my wife was not. Uh-huh. And we were in a different denomination and a very different way of thinking about theology. Mm-hmm. Still Christian.
Sure.
And we all worship Christ as the Son of God and the Savior, but a very different way of interpreting the Bible. And it took me probably about 6 or 7 years to work her out from that and into a Reformed church, and now we get a thumbs up when it comes up that way. So she got it too.
She gets it. Well, you know, and you talk about how it took you so much time to work her through it, and that was work on your part, because God has given us a mind and a will. But the bottom line is, it's the Holy Spirit who begins to open these things up to us.
Yes.
Who begins to help us to see the scriptures. And that does take time. And anyway, that's what we're trying to do in Lancaster, is to begin to open this up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be talking about R.C. Sproul's teaching series on the Promise Keeper. And what he's about here is talking about the God of the Covenants. He's going to begin to open up what we call covenant theology. And he does that through a Bible study, basically, of talking about the various covenants of God. And the thing you'll begin to understand is that the Bible is full of covenants. God is the primary actor here. And he, for some reason known only to him and his infinite wisdom and mercy, wants to have what we call a relationship. But it is in the terms of a covenant, and there's promises that he makes, and there's requirements he makes of us. And he starts that from the very beginning. And if you get a grasp of this, the Bible then begins to fit together because you see the unfolding nature of these covenants. And so that's what Sproul does. And it's a great introduction to what we call Reformed theology, because what Reformed theology is, if anything, it is about the theology that's from the beginning of the Bible to the very end, that the Bible is one unit. Yeah, there's different parts to it. There's different authors that God used, humanly speaking, to write those things. And there's an unfolding nature about it in terms of revealing Christ. But Christ is the focus. That's what he said. Remember in Luke 24, after his suffering, and he's walking with his disciples, and they're all downtrodden, and you know what happened in Jerusalem. And so they're walking away from Jerusalem. And so he appears, and he begins, "Oh, you slow to believe."
Yes.
And he begins to open up the scriptures about how they spoke of him. Well, the covenant is the framework, and he's the focus. And so that's what we want to try to introduce and open up in this study for people, to see what kind of interest there might be as to how we might go forward.
Yeah, a lot of people really don't understand what a covenant is.
Right.
And this is your chance to find out, to really understand the mechanics and the structure of a covenant. Because there is a mechanism and there is a structure, and it really doesn't have a whole lot to do with you so much. It has a lot to do with God. We normally think of a covenant in terms of like a...
agreement sometimes.
Yeah.
Use that word.
When you buy your house.
A contract.
Very often a purchase contract is called a purchase covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Where two parties who are basically on an equal basis come together and make an agreement about what they're going to do. That's not really what we're talking about here, is it?
No, it's not. And Sproul's going to open that up for you. And so, you know, you need to come and find out what we're talking about here, because he begins to show you these differences that, and the neat thing is, if you understand this and God's covenant, well, like everything else, you understand God, as Calvin writes, then you begin to understand yourself, because our relationships are all covenantal also. And it makes a whole lot more sense. The problem with a humanistic worldview where man becomes the measure of everything and he just kind of makes the rules as he goes along, it's really disjointed and it doesn't fit at all. And there's no rhyme or reason for these kinds of relationships. That's why we keep changing the relationships, like marriage, et cetera, and so forth. But you understand God's covenant and how he operates, and then you say, well, oh, I see. My relationship with my employer is a covenant. My relationship with my wife, it's a covenant. And as you talked about, purchase kinds of things. And all that has, shall we say, a theocentric context.
Yeah.
There's another word for it anyway.
Yeah, theocentric. God-centered, and at least hopefully that's the way we're thinking about it. And if we're not, then maybe we need to look at when things fail, what's usually wrong.
Yeah.
Well, very often you find that when large systems fail, it's because they're looking at the wrong thing that they all rotate around.
Yep.
If you make theology, worship, anything like that rotate around yourself rather than around Christ, it's not going to rotate very long.
No.
It will spin off balance. The spindle will break. And God is going to bring you, if you are one of his people, he's going to bring you to himself one way or another.
Yeah, he may have to break the spindle to do it, but he'll bring you back.
And he will. And he will, as many of us who have been involved in having that happen know. Many, God will use whatever means he needs to get you to him.
Right.
And that's one thing that we have to remember, is that God does work through means.
Amen.
And that's one thing you learn when you become Reformed, and you begin to study things like the confessions. And sometimes Presbyterians get accused of, well, you worship that confession.
Oh.
Well, no. All the confession does is systematize what we believe from the Bible. And if you study the confession, the first thing you have to learn how to study is the Bible, because the thing is chock full of biblical references. It tells you where to go to find all this stuff. But that's not where you're going with this study. You're basically giving them the groundwork through a teacher who is eminently understandable.
Right.
I can remember when I first heard Sproul, I had no idea really at the time that there was a difference between Reformed and Arminian belief and blah, blah, blah. I'd hear Sproul And I'd be like, yes, yes, yes. Okay, I understand. And he would bring points up that were I found simply astounding. I'm like, okay, and never thought about it that way. Let me think about that. Anytime you find a teacher who makes you think, it's a good thing.
That's right. And Sproul is that way. And he brings that ability, you know, to the table to open up the scriptures and see what happens is why he resonates with most people. And this is my little joke, and I hope you get it, is that ultimately we'll all be Presbyterian when we get to heaven. Because all of us, if you really are a child of God, and I don't mean Presbyterian in a denominational sense, but I mean in the sense that God is first and foremost. And all of us, if you're a child of God, understand that. That, you know, why does the Lord's Prayer begin and end with God? You know, and it's God first. When we pray for someone to come to a saving knowledge of Christ, what do we pray? I don't care where you come from, what church you come from, if you're really believing in Jesus Christ as your own righteousness and you're connected to him by faith alone, and so you're justified only on the virtue of Christ, you're gonna pray, God, open his heart. Because we all know we can't open somebody else's heart.
Nope.
But that's the essence of it, you see. And that's what I'm saying. All of us, ultimately, that's why Sproul makes sense, because he's able to communicate in a way that you're like, well, yeah, that's what the Bible teaches. I yearn for that. I understand that. And it crosses all denominational lines because, well, let's put it this way. Truth is truth.
Yeah.
And that's what the Bible really is all about. And I'll grant you, as I say that, not every little jot and tittle of R.C. Sproul will you agree with. Maybe I don't agree with him on everything either. But that's okay. That's all what it's about. It's about learning. But the core things, you know, that's what binds us together. And it is the gospel. And the gospel of justification by faith, or I should say by grace through faith alone, that is what holds everything. And that's what Sproul is doing. And he's just been unpacking that. And so he's able to do it in a way that people get it. And so we're hoping that's what happens in Lancaster. People go, oh, I like this. I want to learn more.
Yeah, so we do want to invite him. We're about halfway through the show, so let's first of all, let's give the details of where, when, how, why, who to contact, and that kind of thing. Then we'll give it again at the end of the show.
Yeah, sure. We're meeting hopefully in a central place. We're meeting downtown in Lancaster at the Ohio Glass Museum. Again, it's a known entity. People know where it is, but the address is 124 West Main Street, right down there on Main Street. There's parking, obviously, in front of the building on the street. There is some parking in the back as well because we'll be meeting in the evenings. That starts soon, January 16th.
Okay.
That's tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
It's
okay.
Tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the evening. We're going to run for 6 weeks initially and see
where
that goes.
When you say tomorrow, you actually mean, since this runs on Saturday, it actually runs on the 18th. It will have started two days ago.
It will have started.
Now, that does not mean you can't catch up.
No, by all means, we'll try to help you do that. I'll have the handouts, because even as you get the beginning of it, the way he unpacks this, it's a way to understand all of Scripture. And so, no, by all means, you will get up to speed.
And it's not like once the message is heard, then you burn the disc, right, so nobody can ever see it again. No, that's not the way this works. There will be opportunities to catch up.
Sure. And, you know, the neat thing is, too, is if you get introduced to Sproul, you've never heard him, you can obviously get on Ligonier on the internet, and you can order their materials. And if nothing else, we'll be spreading the word that way, not so much for Ligonier's sake, but as what Ligonier is all about, is spreading the gospel and the teaching of the Bible to all kinds of people. So, yeah, come. I mean, obviously, by the time you hear this, we'll have started already, but there'll be some more weeks coming. And if we get a good response, we will make plans to move forward.
How many weeks are you planning on?
The initial time right now is 6 weeks. We'll see where it
goes. Okay. So it starts on the 16th.
Correct.
The time is, again?
7 p.m.
7 p.m. at the Glass Museum in downtown Lancaster, 124...
West Main Street.
West Main Street. That's important. And we'll repeat that as many times as we can get it out there. So you can. Now, who do they contact if they're interested in something?
Right. Well, there's a website, and you can also find us on Facebook if you Google search it, or if you're on Facebook and you find it. But the thing that you would type in would be Reformed Church of Lancaster.
Okay.
All one word. Just no spaces. And that's reformedchurchoflancaster.com is the website. It has the information there. If you're on Facebook, type in Reformed Church of Lancaster. You'll come up with a Facebook page. There is a phone number. And my contact in Lancaster there, Jeff, will answer that phone, talk to you, answer your questions. The phone number is 740-422-9508.
And give that again.
Yeah, that's 740-422-9508.
Okay. Now, who is leading that?
Who is leading that?
Yeah, that particular that study.
Well, you'll see me. I'll be there.
Okay, you'll be there.
I will be facilitating it. Obviously, Dr. Sproul will be teaching it via the video, but I will be facilitating it and answering the questions. And I, again, as the main contact guy for doing OPC home missions, that's what we call it, the goal will be to talk about what that looks like and how we get from point A to point B, and I'll be helping do that as well.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about that whole home mission thing. Since Barry's not here to do his thing with the Presbyterian Church in America, and I know the Orthodox Presbyterian Church a little better than that, I want to talk about the Orthodox Presbyterian Church and its emphasis on missions.
Sure.
I would ask the question, how did the Orthodox Presbyterian Church come to have such an emphasis on missions, both home and abroad?
Well, really, home missions, I should say missions, that is, the sharing of the gospel of Jesus Christ, of justification by grace through faith, is in its DNA from the very beginning. We can talk about the history of the OPC and the PCA and the mainline Presbyterian Church maybe in a little bit in a minute, but I'm going to focus on this subject here. Back in the 1920s, J. Gresham Machen was a professor at Princeton Seminary in New Jersey. People have heard of Princeton. But in those days, Princeton was the stalwart, conservative, Bible-teaching seminary at the time. But there was lots of winds blowing in the theological circles that were trying to push the Northern Presbyterian Church to more of a progressive and what we'd call a liberal stand on theology. And so what happened was that missions that was being done by the Presbyterian Church, the PCUSA at the time, was incorporating not only the gospel, but sort of a social gospel emphasis. You know, if we did medical outreach, that was called missions. If we built schools or hospitals, that was called missions. And those are good things. Nothing wrong with those things, but that's not missions. Missions is the sharing of the gospel. And so J. Gresham H. and some others started what was called the Independent Board for Presbyterian Foreign Missions. And what they were trying to do was send missionaries that would preach the gospel, that would start churches. That might lead to schools or hospitals, but the emphasis was the starting the church.
Secondary. They're secondary offspring of the primary goal.
Correct. That's right. In other words, keeping our priorities straight.
Yeah.
Well, that got him into trouble because now we had a competing mission kind of a thing going on. Well, so J. Gresham Machen and others were writing about missions and talking about it and getting this conversation going. In the end, the PCUSA, the mainline Presbyterian Church, as we call it, didn't want to have that discussion. They wanted to do what they were doing. And all those men that were associated with Machen were basically asked to leave. To put it kindly.
Shown the door,
right? And so from the very beginning then, those men, there was just a handful of them. They initially started Westminster Seminary, which I'm a graduate of in Philadelphia, and then the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, which, by the way, was called the Presbyterian Church of America at the time.
I remember reading that, and it gets confusing. Yeah,
we'll come back to that. We call it the split peas. You know, there's always these Presbyterians that are all split up. But anyway, so from the very beginning, as they came together, we had ministers and churches that became part of the initial Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And it was all about being faithful to the gospel and doing missions in a biblical fashion, sending men out from the church to proclaim Christ to the world. And so this little church, they were at the beginning. They, you know, sent guys to Ethiopia. They sent people to Japan. They sent people to Korea, you know. And, of course, the World War happened and kind of stopped all that kind of thing. And even nationally, it was about planting churches first.
Mm-hmm.
So to say, what is it about missions? Well, that's who we are. Well, some people say, well, why are you a small church? Well, because we're uncompromising in the gospel. We're not worrying about how big we look or how much money we have. Our focus is on Christ. You know, sometimes I have to be careful how we measure success, I guess. And I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with success or even numerical success. We have some larger churches.
Sure.
We have lots of small churches. But the point is that God calls us to be faithful to preaching the scriptures, all the scriptures, to preaching Christ first. And that's what the OP is really all about. I don't have the numbers exactly in my head, but if you look at our presbytery and if you look at the denomination as a whole, you know, over 90% of the money given goes to missions. That's what we're about. That's who we are. We preach Christ, and we try to be faithful to that great commission in terms of making disciples. So that's, I hope that answers the question about missions and the
You brought up an important point, and Barry and I have often been accused by people of saying, well, you're all about, it's all about politics all the time. And I always laugh and say, no, that's our secondary. That's really, yeah. Are Barry and I called to those issues? Yes. But our primary focus is always on the word of Christ first.
Hmm.
It has to be the center of everything. There are people who are called to be evangelists.
Right.
And there are people who are called to be other things. And but we're all primarily involved in evangelism. You know, and that's what I like about the OPC, the fact that, yeah, we build hospitals and that kind of thing. Second, we get Christians first.
Mm.
And I'm thinking in terms of there, I believe in Africa, there have been some hospitals that the OPC has been involved in building that have been taken by the state, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, Eritrea. Yeah.
Yeah. In Eritrea, which the OPC is very involved in, as I recall right now. In fact, we, or at least was
well,
at
we
one
got,
time.
We got kicked out again.
We got thrown out again. Well, we must be too effective.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. I have remembered talking to one of our missionaries at one point. I could probably share the story. He was there at the time while we were still able to be there because we're never in a country where they don't know why we're there. In other words, we don't do it under the radar. We may try to behave ourselves or be cautious, but they always know, the officials always know that we're there to plant churches and disciple Christians. Well, that kind of gets you into trouble sometimes with certain governments. And so they were sending men from the government into the church to kind of see what he was doing just to make sure. Well, they kept getting saved. It was frustrating the government official because the guys kept getting converted.
Yeah. Gee, that what a horrible thing, right? Well, it's sort of like, you know, that's how Rome basically fell to Christians, essentially,
right.
Because these Roman soldiers, they'd send in people to spy on the churches and spy them out and tell what's going on, and they'd hear the gospel and they'd get saved.
That's right, right.
So, yeah, that's a great thing.
It is. So, yeah, for instance, right now we have a mission group, a mission team in Uganda, working with a particular group of people, the Karamojong.
Mm-hmm.
And connected with that preaching ministry there is a clinic, a medical clinic that's been, we've built it. I mean, at first it was a glorified shipping container that just kind of got added onto. Now we've actually got I think it's an actual building now. But the doctor, we have an American trained doctor, but he's a deacon. In other words, he's servicing, it's a mercy ministry alongside of the ministry of the word, which is primary. And that's always the thing, is to keep what's primary, and what's secondary, et cetera, and so forth. And so we try to do that. I can't say that we're perfect at it. Of course not. You know, we make our mistakes. But that's the goal.
Yeah, and to understand that, deacons are essentially, in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, deacons are missioned. Their mission is to basically service to the church, service to the congregations, specific things. If someone in the congregation needs help with something, that's the job of the deacons. The job of the elders is essentially, it's also service, but it's service in a more of a running the church kind of service.
We'd say it's a rule, an office of rule, but it's applying scriptural principles to the church. So it's a spiritual office. The deacons have a spiritual component to it, but as you look at Acts 6, where the first deacons appear in scripture, they were the ones who did mercy ministry. You know, the actual felt needs and the practical needs of congregants. And so medical facilities or that kind of thing would fall into that category.
Sure. Now we get updates from time to time from that hospital. Just you know, we get email updates.
Right.
Just and in fact, I think is his father in our presbytery?
Yes. Yeah. Jim Knox is the doctor, and Dan Knox, Pastor Dan Knox, is an OPC pastor in Swickley, just in the Pittsburgh area, right?
Okay. And I got to meet him for the first time there in the at my Trial by Fire Presbytery meeting.
yeah, of course, you get to think about, as time goes by, because I had Jim, Dr. Jim, when he was a camper at Presbytery camp, so, you know, time goes by.
Wow. Yeah, and the Orthodox Presbyterian Church does those kinds of things.
Right, we have a youth camp.
Youth camp, mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not the same as the camp that I run, but it's a very important camp, mm-hmm. that... we do our best to get our young people. You know, that's one thing that we need to do is pass the faith along to the next generation.
Right.
And pass a proper understanding of the faith along to the next generation. Because let's face it, in our current society, one thing that is going to happen as people go through, because you can't isolate yourself. You have to be, in order to win converts, you have to be out among people, mm-hmm. and you're going to hear all kinds of stuff. And it's not that different than what people are facing, we're facing in the first century. I'm right now teaching a class on the book of Colossians. And one of the things you notice when you're teaching the book of Colossians is that, A, it's one of the few apostolic letters, the few epistles, that are a backpack. It's very positive. Mm-hmm. We're very happy, you know, Paul's saying, we're very happy with what we see out of the Colossians. Don't fall into this trap.
Right.
And the first thing he goes into is all the things that they're being bombarded with, being encouraged to do. And if you look at it, it's exactly the same thing with a different mask, exactly the same thing, slightly different mask on, that people are facing today.
Right. Which takes us back, if I can say full circle in a sense, to covenant again.
Yes.
Because what the covenant is about is that God makes a promise to people and their families, and he works through families so that we are individuals. There is an individual relationship between you and Jesus Christ, and you become a child of God when the Holy Spirit regenerates you. But it's not just you. But you think about Abraham. God chose Abraham and his seed. And Paul says in Galatians, you know, that through Christ we are the seed of Abraham. There's this covenant again that crops up. And it's important to how you view your family and how you pass the faith on to your children and the promises that God makes. And again, all that fits together. There's a theological construct to all that. So it comes back around again and again.
Doesn't it always?
Yeah.
Well. That's the one thing that you find there. I think it's in Proverbs where it says there's nothing new under the sun. That may be in Ecclesiastes. I can't remember. But there's nothing new under the sun.
That's right.
Once you begin to do these studies, that's what you find out. There really isn't anything new under the sun.
Well, man is man, you know.
Man is man. It all goes back. And in fact, one of my fellow elders in my class, we were talking about this subject, and he pipes up and he says, and it all goes back to Genesis 3, which it always does.
Yeah.
Hath God really said? And that's the bottom line.
Sure.
So the Orthodox Presbyterian Church's emphasis on missions is because...
Because that's who we are. It's because we believe that that's what God has called us to do. That's what God has called the church to do, to proclaim Christ. And so that's the warp and woof, the focus of all that we do in terms of starting churches, in terms of having an organizational structure. It's all about sharing Christ, that the nations would come to Christ. That's what we're told in Scriptures. So,
yeah, and in our case, the nation maybe come back to Christ.
That's right. God does that sometimes.
Because sometimes it's a little disconcerting. People don't realize how badly we've slipped away from the covenant. But it's nothing new in this country. We began walking away from the covenant almost as soon as we formed the new government. The first thing we did was begin to walk away from the covenant with God. And in fact, if you go back to the true founding of the United States, go back to the Puritans, they were moving away from the covenant.
Yeah, it's always our nature, you see. That goes back to Genesis 3 again. You know, if there's a difference between a distance between you and God, well, guess who moved? And it's always us.
Yes.
You know, that's the whole point. But that's why, again, some people will say, well, Pastor Larry, if you go to Lancaster, you know, you see some pretty church buildings. Yeah, there are. And again, what I'm about to say is not a slight against any other church, but what we're trying to do is say, listen, we need to come back to the Bible. We need to come back to the theology that flows out of that Bible, that faith which was once and for all delivered to the saints. And unfortunately, not only has our nation slipped away, but a lot of churches have, and we're simply taking the opportunity here to teach the scriptures in their clarity and their simplicity, and hoping that people will say, yeah, I like this. And how can we, as it were, rediscover this in the Lancaster or the Fairfield County?
Sure. And I'm assuming that once you are successful, and we're going to say that it will be successful, we're not going to talk it down, because I think you will be. I've seen sometimes they're a struggle, and sometimes they go way easier than you thought they were going to be, I would assume. You know, we have plants in places like, Huntington, West Virginia.
Right.
Which is not exactly Reformed country.
No, it's not.
It's I would say that's a lot more Baptist and charismatic in that area. So some of these struggle, but as I recall, they're doing well among the college population down
there.
That's right. Which is why, for instance, our presbytery, even though there's a period of time you usually give a plant church that you the denomination says, we got to see something out of this after a while.
Well, there's an investment, right?
Yeah.
Of resources.
Yeah. But even our presbytery said, well, we'll pick up some of that, you know, even after the denomination in general says, well, you're past your normal time, but we're seeing some success in these areas, so we need a little more help. You know, that's the bad part about this. We do our best to make sure that the pastor can feed himself and his family.
Well, that's important.
And also, so they doesn't have to take a second job, so he's a dual-minded man.
Right.
Because, let's face it, I can't imagine a job harder than being a pastor.
Well, thank you.
No, I'm serious. Because, I mean, you've got all these people that you're caring for. I mean, I didn't understand what it was to be just to be an elder till I became one.
Mm-hmm.
And my job's fairly simple compared to the pastor's job. Because he's the upfront man. He's the guy everybody calls. Nobody calls the elders first. They always call the pastor first, you know. And even though we're supposed to do shepherding duties, you know, everybody thinks in terms of the pastor. Because we've got this thing in our head. Americans kind of have gotten into this idea. Since we've gotten away from a Presbyterian-style government, we've gotten into this CEO way of thinking of everything. Well, it's one man.
Right.
Well, no, it's not supposed to be. But even in our current condition, everybody puts all the weight on the pastor.
That's the default setting. You know, if you read the book of Acts, we actually see the church growing and church government being worked out. You'll see that the Apostle Paul and the apostles, they put elders in every church, and that's a plural. And that's the essence again of it. It's not one guy, but there is a lot of weight on the one guy, and we got to be careful about that.
There's a in Exodus 18.
Mm-hmm.
Where Jethro tells Moses, "You see the core of that being built. You're taking too much upon yourself.
Right.
This is not good for you, and it's not good for them. Appoint men to be leaders over thousands, hundreds, fifties, tens.
Right. Breaks them down into groups, into manageable groups.
And essentially those were like clan leaders and that kind of thing. But you see the core of that. Basically, let them judge." The small things, the stuff that you're killing yourself on, and you take on the things that are just way too difficult for anybody else to really handle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially what that was the Presbyterian system.
It simply takes that idea and borrows it, because they were called elders at the time.
Yes.
So, you know, again, you've got to understand there's a connection between the Old Testament and the New Testament, and they work together. They lead us to Christ. One is looking forward to Christ. One is looking back. But there are these shared concepts, and it's built together because it's built around Christ. And you're right. Those elders are the, shall we say, the genesis of what we understand elders in the church. You know, what was called the kahal in of the Old Testament, the congregation, is called the ecclesia, the church, as we understand it in the New Testament. And you have elders in both places that have a very important role to play. And so that's... In a sense, if we're thinking about what's this about in Lancaster, well, laying laying the groundwork, hopefully, Lord willing, for this kind of a church to be established, and that a church that will proclaim the gospel in its fullness, in its depth, but with practicality to the lives of people who would come in here. And so that's what we're endeavoring to do. We want to work with Christians that are in the area, but we also want to teach what we think is faithful to the Scriptures, that is in conformity to what we think are the Reformed confessions that delineate those doctrines that we hold dear.
That's the beauty of it. I personally think it's the beauty. It's the way to plant a church. I know that, for instance, we've talked about this before, a lot of OPC congregations aren't much over 60, 70 members.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few.
Right.
I can think of one here in Columbus that's bigger than that. But very often what happens is when you get above a certain size, and there's a book that Barry and I have both kind of raved about on here called The Tipping Point. I don't know if you've ever read it or not. But the basic idea is that once you get over 150 people, it becomes unmanageable.
Right.
And we've always said if we got that big, the first thing we'd do was take 75 people, plant a church.
Yeah.
Train elders. And that's one thing. You know, you just don't become an elder in the Presbyterian church. You just don't become a deacon. You just don't say, hey, how would you like to do that job? You have to go through a training session. You have to be vetted really by the A, by the elders, and B, by the congregation, because you don't get to be an elder unless you get elected by the congregation. And believe me, people do not want the wrong people ruling over them.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Because I've been in a situation where the question was, well, is that person, not me personally, is that person going to rule over us?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was yes. But remember that it's a plurality of elders. He's not going to be by himself.
It's not a dictatorship.
Yeah. And, you know, there are ways to remove an elder if that becomes necessary. I've never heard of that. Now, I haven't been in this congregation very long. I'm sure it does happen.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of it. And generally, people are chosen for their talents and their treasures that God has given them. So they understand the way these things work. So that when they come vetted from the elder, say, we'd like to serve with this person. And the congregation has the option. Somebody may know something, and they can get up in a meeting and say, he's not the right guy for the job.
Right. And of course, no one becomes an elder unless the congregation, in a sense, has seen this guy in their midst for a while. And so it is a process. It's just the same thing with a pastor. No one just becomes a pastor
right.
in the Presbyterian Church. There's a lot of training that goes. In fact, I'm working with a young man right now who is a recent graduate of seminary almost about a year ago. And he's going through his exams one step at a time. And they're like 3 hours long, oral exams.
I watched one of those. I watched the final exam at the Presbytery, two final exams, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That was a sweat box session.
Yeah.
There were some tough questions in there that I went, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So even after you got the degree and even after you get all the stuff done and all the papers written, guess what? It isn't just a cakewalk.
Uh-uh. No, it's not automatic.
Nope.
You really got to prove you got what's going on to get the mantle.
But that gets me back to where we started in a sense of accountability. You see, all of us are accountable. That's how God set reality up. We're accountable to him, and in the church, we're accountable to each other. Ministers are accountable. And again, as we're thinking about this effort in Lancaster that's meeting on the 16th at 7 p.m. on Thursdays.
And 16th and 6 weeks after that.
That's right.
Every Thursday.
Every Thursday for a week, every Thursday evening. As it meets then, what we're after is talking about this idea of putting in place accountability, that we're accountable as believers to each other, and this group would be accountable. If that's the kind of church you're interested in, come and check us out.
Yeah. Again, Pastor Larry Oldacre, and we would love to hear from you if you're interested in this. Remember, we'll put a lot of this information up on our website as well, and Pastor Larry has talked about this website that's available. It is, once again,
Reformed Church of Lancaster.com.
You can find out more information too at principledpolicy.com. So we'll make sure you get the information. If worst comes to worst, you can contact Barry and I, and we'll give you the information on where to hook up, because we want you to be there.
Great.
Thank you, Larry, for coming in, and we appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it was a good interview. Thank you. You sometimes these things are like you ask a question. Okay. That being said, though, join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.